We will be looking at the entirety of John chapter 9. In the Gospel of John, we read of a number of miracles that Jesus performs. John doesn't call them miracles, he calls them signs. Why? Because they signify something. A sign points to something else. Jesus didn't do miracles just for the sake of doing miracles. There's a point behind them. And what these signs are pointing to are Jesus himself. That he is the Savior. In the other Gospels, you often read miracles that Jesus does, and they're just, especially if you go through a Gospel like Mark, they're just throwing stuff at you. He's just throwing stuff at you all the time. And you just see all these miracles one after the other. But he doesn't spend a lot of time explaining what the point of the miracle is. John does. When John gives you a miracle, a sign, he then has this long discourse in which he is explaining the point of the sign. For example, what's the one miracle that we read in all four Gospels? The feeding of the 5,000. Well, besides the resurrection of Jesus. The feeding of the 5,000. If you read about the feeding of the 5,000 in Matthew, Mark, or Luke, it just kind of tell you, and that's it. John has this long passage in which he explains that giving bread to these people is a picture of Christ himself, and Jesus says what? I am the bread of life. He who comes to me shall never hunger. He who believes in me shall never thirst. So the reason that he did this miracle is to point to himself, how he is the one who sustains us. In the other Gospels, you may read about Jesus raising the dead. He raises the daughter of Jairus. He raises the son of the widow at Nain. And in the Gospel of John, we read that he raises Lazarus from the dead. But he doesn't just raise him and that's it. He then turns to himself. He points to himself. And he says, I am the resurrection and the life. He who believes in me, though he dies, he shall live. So he's always bringing people back to himself. These signs are about him. Jesus is the Savior. He is the one who sustains us. He is the one who gives life. And so in today's passage, in John chapter 9, Jesus heals a man who is born blind. Why does he do that? Just for the sake of healing someone? No. Because he is teaching that he is the light of the world. He gives light to those who are in darkness. And specifically, or actually more importantly, not just physically, but he gives light, spiritual light, to those who are spiritually blind. That's the point of the passage. So let's start reading the text. We'll just go through it and comment as we go along. John chapter 9, starting in verse 1. It says, Now, as Jesus passed by, he saw a man who was blind from birth. And his disciples asked him, saying, Rabbi, who sinned, this man or his parents, that he was born blind? So Jesus and his disciples are walking along. They see a man born blind. They ask, whose fault is it that he's born blind? His fault or his parents? Now notice, they're making an assumption here. And their assumption here is just that they believe something that pretty much all of the Jews believed at that time, something that a lot of people still believe today. That if you had, they believed that if you had some kind of suffering in your life, it must be directly because of some sin that someone has done. All right? Someone sins, therefore you get suffering in your life. Remember the book of Job. That's exactly what Job's friends thought. All the bad things that happened to Job, not because he had sinned, he hadn't done anything wrong, but all the bad things happened to him, and his friends come and they say, Job, it must be because of some sin. We've never seen a man suffer this much. You must have done something. And he's like, I don't know what I've done. And they're like, oh, look at you all, arrogant and proud. You won't even admit what you've done. You must be hiding some kind of sin. They're always relating the suffering that you're going through with some sin that you must have committed. And so the disciples are doing that. They're saying, this man is born blind. Either his parents must have sinned, and that's why he's born like this, or he himself must have done something. You're like, when did he do it? Well, in the womb. In the womb, he must have done something. And in fact, before you say, really, in the womb? Yeah, well, a lot of rabbis pointed to Jacob and Esau in the womb, who were fighting in the womb, and they said, there you see, you can be sinning in the womb. So, yes, they were like, what happened here? Did this man do something wrong? Or did his parents do something wrong for him to be blind? But those are the only two options that they can see. For them, it's either this or this. There's no other option. And while there are questions, there are times when it's either this or this. There are some questions that are either this or this. Is Jesus God? Either he is or he isn't. There's no third option. There are times when there is no third option. But there are other times when there are more options. Should we eat chicken or should we eat pizza? Well, there could be other options. There's not just those two foods. And so they say to Jesus, is it this or is it this? And he says, neither. There's a third option that you're not thinking about. Look at verse 3. Jesus answered, neither this man nor his parents sinned, but that the works of God should be revealed in him. I must work the works of him who sent me while it is day. The night is coming when no one can work. As long as I am in the world, I am the light of the world. So the disciples are saying, okay, who sinned, him or his parents? Jesus says, neither. Now, Jesus is not saying that this man and his parents are sinless. Okay, that's not the point at all. Okay, Jesus is not saying that sin and suffering have absolutely no connection. He's not saying that. We know that the only reason that sin, that suffering and sickness and death exist is because Adam and Eve sinned and brought the fall. Okay? So we can't say that there's no connection between sin and suffering. Jesus is also not saying that God never brings suffering into a person's life because of sin. There are numerous times in the Old Testament where we do find that, where someone sins against God and God brings affliction upon him. We do see that. So you can't say that never happens. It does. Random example. There's so many. Remember King Uzziah? King Uzziah, great king, but towards the end of his life, I don't know why, he decided to go into the temple and burn incense. And so he heads, he's not allowed to do that. He's not a priest. He's a king. And he goes into the temple with fire ready to burn incense. And the priests are like, no, you're not allowed to do this. And he's like, no, I'm going to do it. And God strikes him with leprosy. And they all freak out. He freaks out. They're like, get out. He runs out. And he was never healed. He lived the rest of his life secluded somewhere until he died from leprosy. All right. So, and there are numerous times in Scripture where someone does something sinful that he shouldn't do, and then he is afflicted. So we can't say, well, that never happens. But what Jesus is saying, in this specific case, neither the parent's sins nor the man's sins are what have caused this affliction. In this specific case, there's another option. There is no connection right now between the sins of the parents or this man with the affliction, with the fact that he was born blind. He says, in this case, the man is born blind so that the works of God will be revealed in him. God is going to do something. God is going to reveal himself. God is going to reveal his work. God is going to reveal his glory through this blind man. For decades, think of this, for decades, because this guy is older, as we will see. For decades, this man has been in darkness. And he has no idea that all of his life, the reason these things are going on in his life is so that Jesus can manifest himself in healing him. He has no idea that for 2,000 years, people are going to be talking about this incident where Jesus heals him, and we can see the providence of God and the sovereignty of God and the glory of God. So suffering in a person's life is not necessarily directly related to a specific sin. There could be all kinds of reasons why God is doing this. And so it's wrong, let me just point out, it is wrong when a person assumes that just because someone is suffering, it must be because of some sin. You don't know that. It could be, but it could not. You don't know what it is. I don't know why we go through all the terrible things we go through. I don't know in each specific case why we go through what we go through. What I do know is that God says that He works all things together for the good of those who love God, who have been called according to His purpose. God works all things ultimately for His glory and also for the good of His people. So Jesus says, the reason this man is blind is because we're going to see the work of God now. And He says, I am the light of the world. And to show you that, I'm going to heal him. Look what He does. Verse 6. When He had said these things, He spat on the ground and made clay with the saliva. And He anointed the eyes of the blind man with the clay. And He said to him, go wash in the pool of Siloam, which is translated sent. So he went and washed and came back seeing. Now, it's interesting how Jesus performs miracles. He sometimes uses means, like He does here. He makes clay and puts it on the man's eyes. In Mark chapter 8, He heals another man who is blind, but there He doesn't make mud, He just spits. He just puts spit and puts it on the man's eyes, and He heals him. In other cases, most of the time, He just says it, just speaks and does it. So there's no one way in which Jesus performs miracles. He can do it any way He wants. And this, I don't know why. I don't know why. Sometimes He does it one way, sometimes He does it the other. Let me give you one probable explanation. And that is because He is trying to show that there is no magical formula here. It's not that, well, as long as you say the right words, as long as you do the right little things, well, then you'll be able to heal someone. Imagine if Jesus always healed everyone the exact same way. Imagine if He always said the exact same words, always did the exact same things. You would have people all over the place. You would have charismatics all over the place, spitting on the ground, making the mud, putting it on people, saying the right words, just because this is how it's supposed to be done. This is the magical formula. But He doesn't do that. He can do it any way He wants. If He wants to do it this way, He can do it this way. If He wants to do it that way, He can do it that way. And so He puts mud on this man's eyes. He washes it off, and he can see. He's healed. And so people around see that the man is healed, and they want to know what happened. They want to examine this. What's going on? This is not a normal occurrence. And so they want to examine it. And that's a good thing. It's a good thing to want to, when something strange, supernatural occurs, it's a good thing to examine it. Alright? We're not to be fools. Do you know how many religious crooks are out there? A lot. For thousands of years, you have religious crooks trying to take advantage of you, trying to take your money, trying to make a name for themselves, whatever. Okay? Paul says, examine all things. Don't be fooled. Look into it. See if it's true. And if it is true, believe it. Alright? So they're like, okay, what has happened here now? So they all huddle around to see what has happened to this man. Verse 8. Therefore, the neighbors and those who previously had seen that he was blind said, Is this not he who sat and begged? Some said, this is he. Yeah, it's him. Others said, he is like him. So they're saying, well, it looks like him. It looks like him. Maybe it's his twin or something. It looks like him. He said, I am he. Therefore they said to him, how were your eyes opened? He answered and said, a man called Jesus made clay and anointed my eyes and said to me, go to the pool of Siloam and wash. So I went and washed, and I received sight. Then they said to him, where is he? He said, I do not know. They say to him, who did this? He says, man named Jesus. That's all I know. I don't know the man. I don't know where he's from. I don't know. Just a man named Jesus. That's all I know. Well, where is he? I don't know. I don't know what it looks like. He could be standing right there. I don't know. I didn't see him. I was still blind when he told me to go wash. I have no clue. I have no clue. Like, okay, well, this sounds like a religious matter. So, let's take him to the religious leaders, the Pharisees, and they'll examine this. Look at verse 13. They brought him who formerly was blind to the Pharisees. Now it was a Sabbath when Jesus made the clay and opened his eyes. Then the Pharisees also asked him again how he had received his sight. He said to them, he put clay on my eyes, and I washed, and I see. Therefore some of the Pharisees said, this man is not from God, because he does not keep the Sabbath. Others said, how can a man who is a sinner do such signs? And there was a division among them. So they take the formerly blind man to the Pharisees, and John makes a point that it was the Sabbath. Now, numerous times in the Gospels, Jesus is accused of breaking the Sabbath, and that's the same thing that they do here. Now, they don't tell us how he broke the Sabbath, but I can give you at least three ways in which, in this one occurrence, the Pharisees would say that Jesus broke the Sabbath. Three ways. Number one, you're not allowed to heal on the Sabbath. Okay? There was a story where this woman who was stooped over came to Jesus, and he healed her, and the Pharisee and the Jews had said, 6 days you can heal, but not on the Sabbath. Alright? Because it's like a doctor who is working. A doctor was not allowed to work on the Sabbath. The only way that a doctor could work on the Sabbath was if the person's life was in danger. If you were going to die on the Sabbath, it was an emergency, then the doctor could help you out. But if you can make it through another day, nope, leave him alone, don't do anything. Okay? And this man has been blind for I don't know how long, so he can survive one more day. You do not have to heal him on a Sabbath. So number one, they believe that he's broken the Sabbath because he healed a man. Number two, you are not allowed to put ointment on your eyes. Again, that's probably connected with medicine. You're not allowed to do that. And Jesus rubbed ointment on this man's eyes on the Sabbath. And you, if you think that I'm not making this stuff up, this is standard Jewish teaching from 2,000 years ago. Pharisaic teaching from 2,000 years ago. Number three, Jesus made clay. He had to get the dirt. He had to spit in it. He had to mix it. Oh, tons of work. That's tons of work. That's three accounts that Jesus was guilty of for breaking the Sabbath. It doesn't matter why he did it. It doesn't matter that he healed a man who had been in darkness all his life. It doesn't matter that the Sabbath was not made for, man was not made for the Sabbath, but the Sabbath was made for man. It doesn't matter that it's always lawful to do good regardless of whether it's Sabbath or not. No. He's broken the Sabbath. They're all just all fighting about technicalities. And so you have a group of Pharisees saying Jesus cannot be from God because he's broken the Sabbath. Then you have some other Pharisees who are saying, you know what? If he's not from God, how can he do these things? I don't understand. So there's a division. There's a division among them. So they don't know what to do. So they go back to the man again. Let's ask the man again. Look at verse 17. They said to the blind man again, what do you say about him? Because he opened your eyes. He said, he's a prophet. So they ask him again the same thing. What do you think about this man who healed you? And notice, this formerly blind man has been thinking about it. They had asked the man, what do you think about Jesus? And all he said was, I don't know, it's a guy named Jesus. That's all I know. Now, they say to him, what do you think about Jesus? And he says, oh, he's a prophet. He's got to be a man of God. All right? Now, they don't like that option. They've asked him, what do you think? He says he's a prophet. They don't like that option. And so, what do? They call in the guy's parents. They call in the guy's parents to find out if they can get some more information. Look at verse 18. But the Jews did not believe concerning him that he had been blind and received his sight until they called the parents of him who had received his sight. And they asked them, saying, is this your son who you say was born blind? How then does he now see? His parents answered them and said, we know that this is our son and that he was born blind, but by what means he now sees, we don't know. Or who opened his eyes, we don't know. He is of age, ask him, he will speak for himself. And in case you're thinking, well, maybe they didn't know about Jesus, or in case you're thinking, why is it that they're avoiding the question, the next verse tells us. Look at verse 22. His parents said these things because they feared the Jews, for the Jews had agreed already that if anyone confessed that he, Jesus, was Christ, he would be put out of the synagogue. I'm sorry. But I want to think about what these people have been through all their lives. They had a child born blind. Can you think of the difficulties that these people have gone through to raise a blind child, knowing that there's no hope that he's going to see? There is no hope for this boy. He's going to grow up to be a beggar because there's nothing else he can do. The difficulties, the agonies that these people have gone through. And one day, their son comes home and says, I can see. And instead of running to Jesus and saying, thank you for healing our son, they say, oh, we don't want to have anything to do with this because they may kick us out of the synagogue. You know, being part of the synagogue is the center of the whole community. If they kick us out, what are people going to say? So we can't say that Jesus is the Messiah. We can't say that Jesus healed him. We don't want to have anything to do with this because we could get in trouble. So they just say, well, he's old enough. Ask him. I'm sorry. I'm reading that and I'm just disgusted by the whole thing. But so be it. They don't want to have anything to do with it. So the Pharisees don't know what to do. Let's go back to the man again. Ask him again. Maybe we can figure this out. Verse 24. So they again called the man who was blind and said to him, give God the glory. We know that this man is a sinner. Now, usually when we read that, where they say, give God the glory, we know that this man is a sinner, we tend to think that they're saying, well, give glory to God for what happened, not to man, not to Jesus. Glorify God, but don't glorify Jesus. That's probably not what they're saying. When they're saying, give God the glory, they're probably putting him under oath. And they're saying, before God, before the glory of God, tell the truth, this man is a sinner. So they want him to swear and answer what they want him to say. Say, take an oath before God that this man is a sinner. So, verse 25, the man says, he answered and said, whether he is a sinner or not, I do not know. One thing I know, that though I was blind, now I see. Look, I don't know who this man is. He's a guy named Jesus. You can say whatever it is that you want about him. You can say that he's broken the Sabbath. You can say he's not from God. You can argue whether he's a prophet or not. I don't know. I don't know. One thing I know. I was blind and now I see. That's the one thing that I'm certain about. And he goes on. Verse 26. Then they said to him, again, what did he do to you? How did he open your eyes? Again. Verse 27. He answered them, I told you already, and you did not listen. Why do you want to hear it again? Do you also want to become his disciples? He did that on purpose. That was not an accident right there. He did that on purpose to rile them up. This is the greatest day of his life. The last thing he wants is to spend his day fighting with the Pharisees. And he doesn't care if they kick him out of the synagogue. What does he care? They probably treated him like dirt all his life anyway. He's a beggar who's probably in that condition because of his sin. He doesn't care. And he's like, why do you keep asking me about Jesus? Is it because you want to be his disciples? Is that why? Oh, how dare you? Verse 28. Then they reviled him and said, you are his disciple, but we are Moses' disciples. We know that God spoke to Moses. As for this fellow, we don't even know where he's from. Listen to the guy again. Listen to the man. The man answered and said to them, why, this is a marvelous thing that you don't know where he is from, and yet he opened my eyes. He's saying, wow, that's amazing. You, the religious authorities, the rulers, the guys who know everything, the experts. There's a miracle that happened and you don't know what's going on. You don't know who this guy is. That's amazing. And now he proceeds to teach them some theology. Verse 31. He says, now we know that God does not hear sinners. But if anyone is a worshiper of God and does his will, he hears him. Since the world began, it has been unheard of that anyone opened the eyes of one who was born blind. If this man were not of God, he could do nothing. Now, so you have the formerly blind beggar explaining theology to the religious leaders, and he is saying, look, Jesus has got to be a prophet. This has never happened before. No, if he's not from God, he wouldn't be able to do these things. You would expect, you would hope that the Pharisee would say, you know, he's right. This has never happened before. Go through the Old Testament. Never do you hear of a man born blind being healed. This is the first time. I mean, if this man is not from God, I mean, he has to be. You would think that that would be their reasoning. But what do they say? Verse 34. They answered and said to him, you were completely born in sins, and you are teaching us? And they cast him out. And let me just point out, when they say you were completely born in sins, they're not talking about the doctrine that we teach, that we are born sinners. That's not their thing. I'm pretty sure they're pointing to the fact that he was born blind, and they're assuming that it's because of some sin, and so they're saying, you were just awful, terrible. The reason that you're in that state is because of your sin. We are the doctors of theology and you're going to tell us about God? And they kick him out. They kick him out. Now, so the man is healed. He can see. Doesn't know where Jesus is. Doesn't know what Jesus looks like. Something that we often assume wrongly is that whenever Jesus healed a person physically, that the person was automatically saved. That's not always, sometimes that's true. He heals a man and the person immediately believes in Jesus. But that's not always the case. Remember when Jesus healed the 10 lepers? Only one came back to thank him. The other 9 just went on their own way. They didn't care. I can see. I'm healed. I don't need Jesus. When Jesus fed the 5,000, I know it wasn't a miracle of healing, but he gave miraculous bread to 5,000 people, and then they're all gone. They just wanted the food. They didn't care about him. So just because Jesus has done something miraculous or healed a person, that doesn't mean they're automatically saved. And so we have this man who, his understanding has gone from, well, it's just a guy named Jesus, to, well, he must be a prophet or a man of God. But that's all he knows. That's all he knows. And he doesn't know where to find Jesus. And so Jesus goes and finds him and reveals himself to him. Look at verse 35. Jesus heard that they had cast him out. And when he had found him, he said to him, "Do you believe in the Son of God?" He answered and said, "Who is he, Lord, that I may believe in him?" And Jesus said to him, "You have both seen him, and it is he who is talking with you." Then he said, "Lord, I believe." And he worshipped him. He finds that Jesus is not merely a prophet, but he's the Son of God. He's the Messiah. He is worthy of worship. He believes and he worships him. Look at verse 39. And Jesus said, "For judgment I have come into this world, that those who do not see may see, and that those who see may be made blind." And some of the Pharisees who were with him heard these words and said to him, "Are we blind also?" Jesus said to them, "If you were blind, you would have no sin. But now you say, 'We see.' Therefore, your sin remains." We see here that there is something more than just physical blindness. Jesus is talking about some other kind of blindness, some kind of spiritual blindness, blindness of the heart. Now, do you remember Jesus elsewhere had said, "I've not come for the righteous, but for sinners"? What does that mean? Does that mean that there are some people who are righteous who don't need Jesus? No. When Jesus said that, he was talking about the Pharisees who were self-righteous, who believed they were righteous, and therefore they didn't want Jesus. We don't need Jesus, we're righteous. And Jesus says, "Well, I haven't come for the righteous. If you think you're fine, I didn't come for you. I came for people who know that they're sinners." Only those who humble themselves and acknowledge their sin and know that they're not righteous will turn to Christ for forgiveness and for salvation. Likewise, Jesus had said, "A physician, a doctor, doesn't come for the healthy, but for the sick." Well, does that mean that there are some people who are inherently spiritually healthy and don't need Jesus? No. Again, he was talking about people who are saying, "We're not sick. We're fine. We don't need Jesus." And Jesus is saying, "Well, if you think you're fine, I can't help you, because I came for people who are sick and know they're sick and know that they need help. That's who I came for." And so here Jesus is talking about spiritual blindness, and the Pharisees saying, "Are you talking about us? Are you saying that we're blind?" And Jesus says in verse 41, "Well, if you were blind, you wouldn't have sin. But now you say," notice it doesn't say "you are," he says, "you say, 'We see.' Therefore your sin remains." If you were blind, that would be good. We can work on that. A person who knows he's blind knows that he needs help. But you're saying, "We're fine. We see. So I can't help you." Those people who know that they're hungry, who know that they're thirsty, who know that they're blind, need help. "I'm hungry. I need food. I'm thirsty. I need drink. I'm blind. I need sight." They go to Christ. If you have people who are saying, "We're fine, we're good, we're righteous, I'm full, I can see, we don't need Jesus." And Jesus is saying, if that's your attitude, you remain in your sin. Romans 3 tells us that all have sinned, all have fallen short of the glory of God, all have turned aside. There is none righteous, no, not one. But those who by the grace of God acknowledge their sin, acknowledge their spiritual poverty, acknowledge their spiritual blindness, and turn to Christ, those are the ones that Jesus will heal and save and give them sight. Thank you for your attention. Let's pray.